Welcome to Master the Start, a podcast for young professionals where we interview business experts on how you can master the start of your life in business.
Hola, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to the Master the Start podcast presented by GoMahi.com. I am your host, Bobby Mason. We have episode number 30 coming your way, and today we have Jerry Hall on the show. Let me just jump right into it. Jerry is an award-winning author. He's a professional speaker, an independent business consultant, and a weekend warrior. He holds an engineering degree, an MBA, and has over 3 decades of sales and leadership experience. But most importantly, and all of that stuff is important, but pertaining to our conversation with Jerry today, this is the most important piece. The main reason we have Jerry on the show is because he's a professional storyteller highlighting the lessons he learned from his solo and unsupported bicycle journey from Alaska to Mexico as a 57-year-old novice with very little experience in biking. He is absolutely inspiring, he's entertaining, he's educational, and I find him 100% authentic. So settle in, enjoy this week's episode of Master the Start. Most importantly, I always say this every week, but I'm going to keep saying it because it feels like that's something you need to do in order to run a successful podcast, so I'm going to bother you with it. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, subscribe Spotify, iHeart, or Google Play. Make sure you push that little subscribe button. Make sure you like this episode. We'd really appreciate a couple of thumbs ups. It'd be awesome. And take a look at our social media accounts. We have Master the Start all over the place on social media. And you know what? I'm going to give a little plug for GoMahi here. If you're interested in coming up with new solutions for your company, take a look at our social media pages for GoMahi.com. All right? That is the opening for the 30th episode of the Master Start Podcast. I will talk to you after the show. Jerry, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Well, Bobby, I appreciate you having me on the show.
let's hop right in with who in the world is Jerry Hall and what is his story?
Well, that's a pretty broad question, but let me just put it in a nutshell. I feel like I'm on this earth for just a few moments, so I'm one who wants to get the most out of it while I'm here, and so I'm pretty aggressive about things I try and go after to live a full life, to see what you learn when you do new things, and not only the mistakes you make, but the successes you have, and see how those parlay into, actually, it's as much fun to figure out the good beer drinking stories that come out of those stories, because you can get your buddies and everybody laughing over your antics. But at the same time, you live in a really vibrant, full, healthy life. So that in a nutshell, that's who I am.
I like it. I want you to tell the story of your book, essentially, Downhills Don't Come Free, because I think people need to hear what you did. They need to know how inexperienced you were and how passionate you were about something that was kind of risky.
Well, I mean, so for your listeners, it's a book that in 2012, in the summer, at the age of 57, closer to 58, I felt like every day felt the same. And I have this philosophy that sort of hit me along that way, that if you're not growing, you're dying. So how I need to get off the stale curve and onto the growth curve again. So I resigned, and within 30 days, I was on an airplane flying to Alaska, and I was going to pedal a bicycle solo and unsupported from Alaska to Mexico and see what I saw. And the interesting thing about it is, at that age, most people don't take something like that on kind of audaciously, who didn't train, who'd never done it before, never ridden a loaded bike, never been in clips, never loaded it in Minneapolis, never did little trial runs, never dipped my toe in the water. You just dive in and you figure out, you'll see what you see. and learn along the way and get better along the way, which is exactly what happened. So that's what I did. So I ended up riding a bicycle from Alaska to Mexico. The book tells the day-to-day story of what you run into. You can't possibly contemplate and plan for everything you're going to run into and every decision you have to make. And so you have to trust your judgment to do the right thing along the way and cast your fate to the wind and hopefully you survive, and not only survive, but thrive. So that's what the book is about. And it really, the construction of the book is what led me up into doing this journey. And it was all happened within 30 days. I resigned and I was on a plane within 30 days. And then what the journey was itself, but then what came from it? How did you change and grow as a result of the journey and make some meaning to it? And that's what the book describes, each of those phases. And that's really the structure of the book.
That's awesome. For everyone that doesn't get the backstory, you legitimately resigned from your job. You weren't an avid biker, were you?
No. I mean, everybody knows how to puddle around the neighborhood, right? So, I mean, my extent of biking, I'd never ridden more than 20 miles in any given outing. It was kind of essentially around Lake Minnetonka. Beautiful course, flat. I'd do it maybe once a week. Wasn't part of a biking group. Didn't have biking clothes. Never ridden in clips. Didn't have this big, expensive bike. And I would just sort of like puddle around the neighborhood like anybody else would. I didn't belong part of groups. I wasn't avid, all that kind of stuff. But like everybody else, biking is kind of fun because your head is in the wind and in a short period of time, you can get some distance. So that's what I would do around Lake Minnetonka maybe once a week. So then when I just parlayed that into something bigger, because the way I looked at it, when I looked at this journey, I didn't overthink it because I couldn't possibly contemplate and plan for everything I'd run into. But the way I looked at it is, I know how to camp. I know how to pedal. And I know how to work out. So why not just string a few of those days together? And if you've got the components, you got the capability, and they're called transferable skills, and you just take what you've got and think about it and parlay it into something bigger. And that's what this journey was. And quite frankly, everybody's got that stuff in them. They just stop themselves. Don't stop yourself.
So you talk about what I kind of hear is a big audacious goal. And I know you brought it up when you were speaking over here at the Commons. So why go from Alaska to Mexico? Why not start with like a trip to Duluth or a shorter run, train for it?
Because I just thought that was, in a nutshell, I thought that would be an enormous waste of time. Essentially, it's getting ready to get ready to get ready to get ready to go. And it's pushing paper in a broad swath around your desk for days, weeks, or months and not making a decision and not jumping in. And the way I looked at it is, I'll have plenty of time to get in shape along the way. I wasn't in biking shape at all. But why waste my time trying to do all that, you know, baby steps, you know, dipping my toe in the water? Just dive right in. I'll get better as I go, and I'll get in shape as I go, and everybody does, and everybody would. So I thought the rest of it would just be an enormous waste of time. Just go. But what's really funny, though, is there was a guy who I was originally thinking, I'll go from Seattle to San Diego and just go down Highway 1, 101, beautiful course, West Coast, the whole nine yards. And I ran into a guy, and the guy looks at me and goes, Jerry, if you go, go big. And it just hit me in a snap like, oh, my God, I'm thinking too small. And so on the spot, in a flash, in that moment, I made the decision to go from Alaska to Mexico without any further thought, without any further planning. And I'm glad I did, because I would have hated to miss the majesty of the far north and the resourcefulness and resilience you needed to survive the far north. But beyond that is you just become so much more capable when you think bigger. So it begs the question of everybody in your audience. Where are you thinking too small? Where are you thinking baby steps? Where are you thinking, why am I doing the wasteful things when I can dive right in and go at it? And that's what I did.
Yeah. So how far was that journey and how long did it take again?
It was 3,634 miles. I didn't know the distance of the trip. I never did a takeoff on the map. I kind of didn't know the route as much as I knew that there'd be a road from A to B. And I thought it would be 4 to 5 months. That was just kind of a, you know, spit in the wind to figure out. I didn't know that how long it would take me. So my wife asked me, how long? I said, I think 4 to 5 months. And then she kind of shot me the sideways look like, any way you can stretch it into 6 to 8. In the end, it took me, I was gone for 51 days. I pedaled for 43. And what you found out, I didn't know I had that in me. I thought I was capable. And, you know, my attitude is right. But what you find out is that you're so much more capable than you even give yourself credit for. And that was one of the grand discoveries of the journey, is I did it so much faster than I thought. So I think your listeners would find the same in anything that they take on.
Can you explain the uh-oh moment when your chain broke? And I think the backstory to how unprepared you were in that moment is classic.
I totally can. So I was straining along the Alaska Highway. I was on a little uphill, and I was losing momentum, straining in the pedals in too high a gear. So before I wobbled to a crash, I reached down to downshift, and I had way too much power in the pedals then at that moment. And as the chain came across the sprocket, the chain exploded, and it unravels and just plopped to the pavement. And I coast to a stop. I lay my bike down. I walk back. I pick up the chain. It's like a dead snake in my hands, greasy. And I stand there in the wilderness, nothing around except banshee winds in the high pines. And you have this deflating feeling like, what the hell do I do now? I had no clue how to fix my bike. I had no clue how to fix a chain. I had no clue how to reattach a chain. So I was just standing there forlorn, and then I look in the far distance and I see this yellow dot, and the yellow dot's moving, and pretty soon I realize it's another cyclist, and up rides another cyclist, a woman named Sarah Lamaggi from Minneapolis, and she sees me standing there, and I'm a little rattled, and she goes, there's a way to fix this, Jerry. Do you have a manual? I said, no, I don't have a manual. She says, I got a manual. By the way, she had the exact same bike I had. How? Wow. Serendipity, right? So she reaches deep into her pack, pulls out a manual. She flips it to the chain section. And she says, oh, you can reattach a chain with a snap link. You have a snap link? I said, I don't know. Because when I bought the bike, I said to the guy at REI, hey, if you're going to do a trip like this, what parts would you bring? I mean, I never took any time to learn how to fix anything on the bike, including I didn't know how to fix my flats. Because I said, what parts would you bring? Just kind of walk the parts rack and throw them all in a bag. So we walked the parts rack, played it like a piano, grabbed some things off the rack, threw it in a bag. I never looked in the bag. I wrapped it up and jammed it deep in my pack. So I unravel the bag, and I look it out, and I go, huh, there's a snap link. So Sarah and I, down on our hands and knees, restringing the chain in a teamwork fashion, repositioning it, getting it just aligned, and you clip that little extra piece on there, click, I'm back in business. And I go, oh, my God. I mean, this is a godsend. I'm not a religious guy, but this was a miracle, and this guarding angel came along, and just out of happenstance, I was back in business. So the conclusion with that I've come down to is she didn't criticize. She didn't demean. She just covered my deficiencies, overlooked my audacious stupidity, and attacked the problem in a real rational way. And before you know it, I'm back in business. So as I was riding in the following days, I just thought about it and I said, oh my God, she is the epitome of a true teammate. Of how can you be additive to the people around you and propel them forward? And that's exactly who she was. So that's really the story about the chain.
That's pretty cool. I think this question would kind of go off of that possibly. I don't know if Jerry Hall ever has a bad day, but if he does, you seem to be a pretty positive guy. And even if it could be back in the day when you were at work, maybe it was on the bike ride, when you're having a bad day, how or what is that inner monologue or self-talk that you give yourself to like keep pushing forward or stay positive, whatever it may be?
Well, you know, outside of real tragedy, there isn't a bad day. There just isn't. But I'll give you the indication of a bad day, but then I'll put it back into perspective. And it's not really a bad day, but as a parent, what you do is you live through the trials of your kids. And you got to let them wrestle with their trials. And in some cases, you can solve them. And in some cases you can't. They just have to endure that trial on their own. And all you can do is be supportive. But you kind of live and die as your kids succeed and fail with the overriding knowledge that it's the old adage, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And so you know the things that your kids wrestle with from time to time are nothing but character builders and make them stronger. So that's kind of the overall. But here's the piece that you really got to remember is that my worst day on a bicycle is better than many people's very best day in life. When you think about the ill, the injured, the disadvantaged, that would give anything to trade places with you right now with what they're fighting, what they're wrestling, what their remaining days look like compared to your little trivial, what you would consider a bad day. So in that perspective, there is no cloudy day. There is no bad day unless there's a real tragedy around you, and those are far and few. So the way I looked at everything is I gave everything what I call the big deal, little deal test. And what's a big deal when I was on the ride is in any given moment, if in this moment the risks were such that I could get killed or maimed, that was a big deal. Everything else is a little tiny deal. Everything. And what you find out in life is almost everything, even when you put too much emotion into it, is a little deal outside a real, real conflict, real tragedy. So I found out that most things were just a little tiny deal. And the story that goes with that is one day I was riding, and about midday I picked a town that I was going to get to, and I was going to eat in that town. It took me a lot longer to get to that town. I ran into a series of hills I didn't know were going to be in front of me, and I got into that town essentially in the twilight, fading to dark really quick. And when I got to the town, there actually wasn't a town. There was no town. So I find an empty field, and I just squat and pitch my tent. And I reach in my bag, and all I've got is an orange. Now, I had just ridden over 100 miles. It's in the dark. I'm sitting in my tent, and I'm peeling an orange, and that's all I'm going to have for dinner after 100 miles. So I sat and starved all night long. But in the end, I wasn't going to die. It's a little deal. I'm just going to be hungry. That's a little deal. I'll eat tomorrow. And so you just think about it in perspective relative to people who've got real problems.
Wow. I'm sure it was a bit of a downer when that city wasn't there still.
Well, you just said, damn. You know, what's wrong with this map? You know, it can't be me. It's a damn map. You know what? I mean, back to your original question, there really aren't bad days. They just aren't. I mean, there's always a reason to press forward outside of the very, very far and few tragedies. And quite frankly, I've lived a dream life. I haven't lived through a real tragedy of someone close to me yet. So that'll be a test someday when that comes.
Yes, for all of us. It's always our biggest test. What do you see as the biggest misconception when people think about making big, audacious goals?
So the misconception that people have is they overthink these problems. They see all the goblins. The boogeyman get in the way of them proceeding forward. And you know you're going to have setbacks. I knew going into this trip I was going to have setbacks. I just didn't know what they were going to be. And you just have to kind of manage them and deal with them as you go. And you've already heard a couple of them, but they're really small in nature. And the funny thing is, even if you fail, so what? You're only here for a few moments. There's great stories and good learning that comes out of that failure. And when you tell people about the failures, that's when they crack a beer and want to come in and listen to more about the story. Because I could talk about all my success all day long and everybody moves away from you. But when you talk about your failure, where you crashed and burned, what was going on in your mindset, that's when they crack another beer or move in close and want to know more. So make use of your failures. They create really good conversation points with people. Then those meaningful conversations build trust, and then people want to be around or do business with who they trust. So turn your failures into strengths, and you can.
Good advice. I really like that answer to that question. I think this might piggyback off of it. What would you say is the worst advice you heard most often before you either went on your trip? And I think a lot of people would get a lot of outside feedback when doing something as crazy as you were about to do. So what was some good advice? What was some poor advice?
Well, the good advice was the one we already talked about. You know, if you're going to go big, mm-hmm. That is some of the best advice you could ever get in your life. And so you got to make your listeners say, where do you need to think bigger? But basically most people deferred to, you've never done this. You're not experienced. You've never ridden a loaded bike. You've never ridden any distance. Are you crazy? You're going to get killed. And their fears, their uncertainties, and their doubts would be imposed upon you. And what you can't do is you can't let someone else's fears, uncertainties, and doubts affect your own thinking of your capabilities. So I just felt like, well, what's prohibitive to them can be well within my capability. But how are you ever going to know unless you just go? You'll never know. Here's an example. You can read about riding a bicycle for 100 years straight of every book of how do you ride a bicycle. You can never know until you finally climb on and get the balance and get the feel and everything else. Well, that's what all these problems are. That's what these journeys are. That's what starting a new business is. You can't possibly contemplate all that stuff. So don't waste your time and burn your energy thinking about it. Dive in, use your judgment, make the adjustments along the way, and you'll learn and you'll get better. And pretty soon, you can be pretty damn good at it. And then people start even considering you an expert. People think I'm an expert cyclist. I still don't think I know anything more than before this trip, except some great stories.
Now that you just said great stories, can you tell the story about, I don't remember what it was, running with some army guys, or they had some great model.
Yeah, it was great. It was, so I'm in the Yukon territories. It was very remote. It was kind of, you know, sort of a little bit early afternoon, a dreary, rainy day, scudding clouds. I'm off and on, I'm wet. And I'm climbing for 2 days to get to the crest of the Continental Divide in the Yukon. And the divide divided two major river systems, one that went 2,500 miles to the Beaufort Sea up in the Arctic, and the other river went 2,300 miles west to the Pacific Ocean. But I considered that divide, it was really symbolic to me because it was, the way I looked at it, was the divide between my past and my new emerging future. And even though the end outcome was still thousands of miles away, I didn't know how I'd end up. I just knew I was going to end up changed. At that divide, a truck pulls up. Two U.S. Army soldiers pull out, climb out of the truck, and they come up to me. Oh, what have we here? So I tell them the story, and they said, what can we do for you? I said, well, you can't pedal for me, but you could top off my water bottles. They said, we can do that. We got a jug of water. So I went with them over to their truck, and as they're topping off the water bottles, they hand me this decal. And the decal has got some block letters on it. It's YBYAWC. And I look at them quizzically, and they both blurt at the exact same time. You bet your ass we can. And then they proceed to tell me that's the battle cry of our unit. It's reserved only for those in our unit, but based upon what you're doing, you're now an honorary member. And I looked at them and I just said, I feel so honored to be a part of your proud unit. And as I turned to walk away, I looked back and I looked at them. I said, by the way, guys, I'm so glad we're on the same side because I'd hate to fight against you two nasty dudes. And then I proceeded on my bike.
That is
so YBYAWC was their battle cry. And that is that it's a simple expression of can do. Yeah, we can do it. And so I leaned on that a lot during the trip of hardships of places you're just exhausted, tired, cold, wet, and you wish the day was over, but it's not. But you lean on that. It's so funny because then at the end of some exhaustive climb or when you finally get dry or whatever, it's funny how quickly the hardship fades. And it's about 5 minutes. And all of a sudden you look back and say, that wasn't that bad. That was kind of fun, really. And I don't know what it is about the human spirit, but it forgets those hardships really quickly as soon as you're done with them. I think you'll ask that to marathoners, you know, distance cross-country skiers, whatever. They all look back and 15 minutes later say, well, that wasn't that bad. I felt that way a lot.
Yeah, and I kind of want to dive into your last story of the trip before, I mean, I still have more questions for you, but I thought it was so interesting, your fact about how we lose focus at the end, and your story was just perfect.
Well, you want me to tell it for
yes.
the spoiler?
Or? Yes. Yes, please.
All right. So it was day 50, and like I said, I pedaled 43, and I took some rest days. I never actually felt like I needed rest days. I just took them kind of preventatively, just thinking it would probably be good for my body. But anyway, day 50, I arrive at my brother and sister-in-law's house in California. And they're in San Diego. And it's 25 miles to the border the next day. I thought it was going to be like the Tour de France, where you do the ceremonial ride on the last day, celebrating victory, you know, arms in the air, in all your glory and all that kind of stuff. And I'm sitting on my brother's deck, and we're seeing Mission Bay shimmering in the distance. Beautiful afternoon, and we're drinking a bunch of beer. And I, in my mind, I said, I've made it. And I mentally checked out without realizing myself that I had mentally checked out. In the meantime, my sister-in-law, you've got to know her. She's very enthusiastic, I should say. And she wanted to be part of the ride. She'd been following my blog. She says, I know the way to the border. I want to come. I want to ride the next day. I'll lead you to the border. I know the back roads. I'm riding bike more. I'm doing triathlons now. I'm in a biking group all of a sudden. And I knew instinctively, you got to know my sister-in-law. She's a great gal, and I'm not trying to be mean, but she's an unguided missile. And you don't know where she'll blow up, and you don't know where she'll blow you up. So I instinctively knew not to follow her. So I kept refusing, but she kept persisting. And all of a sudden, finally, I said to myself, she wore me down. I said, oh, what the hell? I'm staying at their house. I'll accommodate her. I'll let her leave me the next day. 25 miles. What can happen in the last 25? Well, it happened. The next morning, we leave her driveway, and like we're the Blue Angels, and I'm the wingman. And I'm following her back tire. And all I am is I'm in a trance, patting myself on the back, celebrating that I'd made it. And I quit using my own mind. I quit using my own judgment, just followed her back tire. In about 7 miles from the border, down in the San Diego Marina District, down at the harbor, there's a lot of construction going on. She cut inside construction cones. I wantonly followed like the wingman of the Blue Angels, just looking at her back tire. And she went right into brand fresh, deep poured concrete. And I was on down in a snap right on top of her. And all of a sudden there we are tangled lying in the concrete as the concrete freezes in place. And I'm freezing like a fossil, you know, into the future. What a paleontologist would find in 200 million years. Here's the deal. Most mountain climbing accidents happen on the way down. I know that. I intellectually know that. I've read every adventure book ever written. And I know what happens at the end. And I did the same damn thing. And so the net of it is, a plane on its final glide slope is not a landed plane. You got to land this thing, and you got to quit following others and use your own judgment. 3,609 miles, I have made all my own decisions. The last 25, I quit making my own decisions, quit using my own mind, and it took me right into the turf. So the whole deal is, trust yourself, and you have got to land that plane till the wheels are down and the plane has stopped. And I made that same mistake that many adventures where you read about tragedy, they do the same thing.
Wow. What would you essentially, I always hear you bring up over and over again, you need to make decisions on your own. You need to really follow your passion. If you had one question that you could go up to every single person and ask them, what would that question be? Where would you lead them or guide them?
It's a very simple question. What's the story of the rest of your life? And is it going to be a story worth telling?
That is a simple question.
Plate that question. You're only here once. Who are you? Who do you want to be? And what's the rest of your life story? Here's the sad thing to me is I'm in my last trimester. I don't feel it, but I know intellectually I am based upon actuarial tables. That I'm in the last trimester of my life. I still feel like I'm 25. But you got to do everything you can do now while you have the energy, the attitude, and the mobility. This past summer, I came back, I trekked to Everest Base Camp because now's the time in your life to do it. And at any level of your life, what are you going to do to create some little stretch that goes beyond what you think you can do? And you don't know if you can do it, and you'll never know reading about it. Dive in, and you'll figure out you're a lot more capable than ever, but live your life. So what's the story of the rest of your life, and is it a story worth telling?
I couldn't agree with that more. That's why I'm struggling to figure out where I want to go next.
This is kind of like, yeah, I'll get real heavy on you with all the psychobabble.
It's good, though. It's really good, because there's very few people, I think, that can truly relate to it or fully understand it and really get to feel that completely.
Well, I think you're right, is that a lot of people think it, but they clutch when it's time to take action. And so they don't take action. And then you hear it in really elderly people in their sunset. You hear it all the time. I should have done this. I should have tried that. I had the opportunity to do this and I didn't do it. And what you find out in your sunset years is you'll start to regret more of what you didn't do than what you did. So don't leave it. I mean, it's the old athletic thing. Don't leave any energy on the field. Use it. Go use it up. Go use your life right now. Go live it.
Yeah.
And you'll be ultimately a hell of a lot more successful. I mean, this is not anti-success. That actually drives success. And with the success comes some failures. With all those aggressive actions comes some failures. You'll be in the penalty box. So what? You know, it's better to aggressively live and fail than wallow adrift in mediocrity and decline. That's just the way I look at it.
How did you decide to write a book? It seems like it might have come out of nowhere, possibly. And I don't know, you don't seem necessarily like the author type.
I'm not. And I've never written Jack. It's and I didn't do this journey to write a book. I didn't do it to create my little piece of content, to create a new little life for myself and pretend like I'm this expert and go on the motivational speaking circuit and, you know, spew all the blather like you hear in most of them. But here's what's so interesting. My daughter, Julia, made me write a blog. And she said, and this is kind of a negotiated agreement. And I mean, just really more in fun and everything. But she said, Dad, you got to write a blog. I said, I don't want to write a blog. I said, I just want to pedal. She said, Dad, we have to know where you are. I said, you're not going to know where I am anyway. Where I'm going, there are no cell towers. There's no way to track me. I mean, you won't know where I am. So she says, just write the damn blog. So I just said, okay. So I wrote a blog. And what I did is, it's so interesting, is because day one is essentially got up, pedaled my ass off, got tired, pitched my tent. Okay, what are you going to say day two? It's going to be the same thing, right? So all of a sudden I go, whoa, how do I think about this trip? And I started thinking, oh my God, I got to think like a journalist. What is the story of the day today? What stands out? Why does it stand out? Why does it matter? Why would anybody care? And how do I tell that story to make it come alive? So pretty soon it changed your focus. As you're writing all day, what stands out to you and how are you going to tell that story to someone else? Pretty soon I'm putting that into my blog every day. And every day you see different things that stand out to you. And then before I know it, I got 14,000 hits on my blog and I didn't promote the blog. And I've got people that are doing blog replies when I'm in a place where I'm connected to a Wi-Fi. And they're coming back saying, dude, we don't know who you are, but you got to write the book. And I'm saying to myself, I didn't do this to write a book. I'm not going to write a book. I didn't, you know, but I'm glad they're enjoying the blog. After I got home, about a month, I said, yeah, what's my next stretch? Then I thought about what everybody had said. You got to write the book. I said, well, it's just my next stretch. It's just another big, hairy problem. The problem is, I've never written Jack. But the problem is, riding the bike, I'd never ridden Jack either. So what the hell? So I thought an overall story structure, started putting words on paper, and created a manuscript. And I gave it to, after my manuscript, I'm kind of proud of the manuscript, you know, a little ego talking there. But, so I gave it to one person, a very literary woman who I trusted, that would give me a straight shot, and I thought she'd love it. So I gave her the manuscript, and about a week and a half later, I ran into her, and I said, hey, yeah, what do you think about my masterpiece? She looked at me deadpan and gave me a two-word appraisal. She said, it sucks. And all of a sudden, I cracked up. I said, well, that's not exactly a buying signal, is it? And then, but I knew it didn't crush me. Because I said, who cares? Who's good at anything the first time they try it? Who didn't crash in the driveway on their bicycles? Does that mean you never got on a bicycle again? I said, I knew it. In my mind, I knew I had the stories. Now, how do I tell them? And so after multiple rewrites of the book, I self-published. And lo and behold, it wins an International Book Award for Literary Excellence. And my buddies are laughing, saying, we don't consider you literary at all. And I'm cracking up with them. And lo and behold, it wins another International Book Award for Literary Excellence from a whole different group. And you say, it struck a chord with someone, and that's over several thousand entrants. And it, all of a sudden, it shows you, you've got these innate talents and innate skills that a stretch in a journey essentially uncovers and awakens. And everybody's got them. So what are you going to do to just put yourself out there and uncover and awaken these innate talents and skills that you have that you had no clue you've got? And actually, now it's become fun in the sense that this journey and this book changed the course of my life in ways I never contemplated up front. And so what I thought was just going to be really a journey of great beer drinking stories turned into a whole new future that I never anticipated. And a blast that I'm having now, telling the story, but also trying to draw the best out of others to have them take the steps that they've been timid to take.
You're changing people's lives through a bike ride.
It actually has. That's what's so shocking about it. Well, I say, well, you need a life then. But anyway, but no, it's so interesting how many people have written or told me saying that after reading the blog and then after reading the book of what they're doing differently and how it was the catalyst to push them over the top where they had been hesitating and double clutching, not taking the step because they were afraid. And they said, if you can do this, I can do that. And it pushed them over the top, not through anything of me telling them. They just took it under their own they took it in their own step to say, if he can do this, I'll do that. And they did. And they said, I can't appreciate more about how that book pushed me over the top to do new things.
Yeah.
And which is kind of, which is rewarding to me. It's very rewarding. That's like music to my ears, because I didn't know that this was going to have the effect on people it has.
And it should be. I mean, a lot of people just need that little push, and seeing your life, your experience, it gives them the push. And that's amazing.
Yeah, well, it worked. So,
in consideration of time, we will hop into the quick fire questions that we ask all of our guests. Okay. And I have a feeling I already know your answer to a couple of them, since we pretty much touched on it. And we'll start with our random question. Oh, okay. Quick heads up. Quick fire never ends up being quick. So okay. The random question.
I'll try and be as quick as I can.
Don't you dare.
All right. Okay.
We take a random question from our audience, and this is usually something that stumps half of our guests. Here's our random question. Would you rather visit 100 years in the past or 100 years in the future, and why?
You know the Jimmy Buffett song, you know, the pirate born 200 years too late? I think kind of being a pioneer out in the, going west, Lewis and Clark, sadly, and the hardships they went through compared to the minimals that I did in relative. But I'm very optimistic for the future, but I think that the great settlement of the West and the wilderness in the past would be a phenomenal thing to have seen and experienced, and use your own instincts, wills, and survival instincts, because I think things are too easy. Things are so much easier to survive now. Things are almost too easy. So I think that would have been really a fascinating time looking into the past 200 years too late, you know.
Why does that
answer
not?
A little bounty and a little booty along the way, you know. And don't, I didn't mean that in the way that you think.
I know. I gotcha. I'm not surprised by that answer either. You seem like the type of guy that would want to be back in the past. So the second question that we ask everyone is, what skills does a young professional need to have straight out of college right now?
I think what you need to do is have really good thinking skills. I mean, here's the critical question is, what's happening here? Instead of just taking someone's talking points and regurgitating the talking points as though that's fact, what is really going on? What are the forces in play? There's forces on everything. There's forces on bodies of, you know, in Newton's physics, forces on bodies and how bodies act. There's forces in politics. There's forces in business. What forces are in play here that are affecting the way this is going? And how do you think about that? How do you peel it back and ask yourself the very basic question, what's really going on here? Why is this happening the way it's happening? And think it through. And when it's uncertain to you, ask the people around you, how do you think of that? What forces do you think are in play? If this pushes here, what do you think the end outcome is going to be? And you anticipate that kind of stuff. That's greater than any, learning how to think is better than any piece of knowledge you come out of a university with. And that's really what you should learn in a university, is how to think. So my undergrad degree was engineering. And you were, and everything I was thinking about were forces. Then on my MBA, it was forces in a different way. It was business forces, whether it's competition, political, new innovation. There's a number of forces in play. What's really happening here? That's what you need to know. And how to think about things.
I love that answer. And you went from engineering to sales, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I'd be a crappy engineer. Hell, if I can't even fix my goddamn tire, how am I going to be a great engineer? But so, you know, it's I can see what the problem is. I just don't want to fix it, right? Here's what's the funniest thing is that I think I'd actually be a really crappy engineer. But I was a really good student. So I came out of engineering graduating with honors. And there are friends of mine who I loved in the engineering school who are getting C's, and they are better natural engineers than I am. So what I'd rather do is I'd rather focus on the business problem than on the technical problem, but I like knowing how to frame up the technical problem so that I can frame the business problem around that. And what are the opportunities? How can things be better? And I love telling that story. So that's why the business side of me was more intriguing and more successful than any engineering side would have ever been.
How in the world at that age were you self-aware enough to realize, even when you were succeeding in engineering, that you just wouldn't be that good at engineering?
I just knew I wasn't. I mean, I don't like to tinker in the garage. Screw it. I'd rather, you know, some guys, I got a Harley Davidson, right? Some guys like to sit in the garage and fidget with their Harley and wash it and buff it up and pet their bike. I don't want to pet my bike. I want to ride the goddamn thing. So that's what... You know, so my bike's always the dirtiest bike when we're all riding with the buddies. And they all laugh at me. And I said, well, that's because I'm spending my time riding and not petting, you know. So that's the way I felt. Like, engineering is more the tinkering and getting in, you know, diving into the detail. I found that I'm much more of a generalist, that I like generally framing up problems, generally seeing where it's going, and being, so I'm a, you know, I'm a mile wide and an inch deep. Instead of a mile deep and an inch wide. And that's just kind of who I am and who I'd rather be.
That's
for my personality.
That's fair. So the third question that we ask everyone is, what do you believe needs to be sacrificed for success? Whether that's professional success or, in your case, just pursuing your passion success. Yeah, what do you think?
Well, there's several things. One, I think, is instant gratification. And maybe sometimes people chase the money, the paycheck, quicker than they chase what their real love is. I think, and so what happens is that it might be a profession that you take on saying, hey, great company, great dental plan, great healthcare, great 401k, but I can't stand what I'm doing there, versus chasing something else that might not have all the little safety nets, but is so much more intriguing, so much more interesting, that you're actually thinking about it 11 o'clock at night and still trying to get to some form of progression of advancing that problem because you're so interested in it. So the piece is chase your interest instead of chase the money. And then when you do that and you love what you're doing, it doesn't matter what field. There's money in every field. But when you're the best, that's what you want to be. Be the best, and then the money's there. And the only way I think you can be the best is when you've got the passion for it. So don't chase the shiny ball. Chase the thing that is most interesting and most rewarding to you. So, and the rest will take care of itself.
So essentially, you have to give up that feeling or that want of instant gratification.
Totally. And, you know, that's the first words that I thought is instant gratification. Then I went into my long spiel and I forgot the words. But that's exactly what it is. Don't chase the immediate if there's something that you think is going to serve you better longer.
Yeah. The last question that we ask everyone is, what is one life hack a young professional should apply to their life this week? So what is one actionable task that they could actually apply and try to do each day this week or one time this week to improve their lives?
Well, it comes down to, what have you wanted to try, but you've held yourself back? So why aren't you going to do it this coming Saturday? Go do it. Go do it. Go dive out of that plane. Go scuba. Go sign up for that lesson to get certified scuba. Go kiteboarding. What is it that, and it's not just all physical, I just kind of relating my side, but it can also be intellectual. Go sing in the choir. Go read that poem. Go start that book. But don't just think about it and kick it around. Say, I'm doing it, and I'm doing it starting right now. And that's when you do that stuff and have that attitude, pretty soon things start to snowball and you're doing more things. And as you do more things, you find out that they're easier than you thought they were. And then pretty soon you know, your problems that you start attacking are a little bigger and a little more complicated and all that kind of stuff. But they're all achievable because you learn in all those, and I say it in my book, but as I thought about it, small stretches shaped my future. And it gave me the attitude, yeah, I think I can do that. And then what I found is this big stretch made a future that I never contemplated. So small stretches shape your future. Big stretches make your future. So what's your next stretch? And what are you waiting for? Start it right now or start it this weekend.
And I love that. And I think everyone needs to do that this week for sure. But yeah. I also think it's tough. And I'm curious to, I want to hear what you think. I think a lot of people, they sit there and they want to start tomorrow. But then it always, you always push it to the next day. Or that tomorrow goal seems so big that you don't even know where to start. And right. I know for you, you have to be extremely outside of the norm because you had a crazy enormous goal and you didn't even break it down into snippets before you left for the goal, you know? Yeah. Right. So how does somebody just either jump right in? Where do they find that courage? Or in your case, do you recommend just jumping in or do you recommend taking small little snippets of that to get to that big goal? Because you kind of did both.
Well, think about it as there's actually an element of both, because one is you jump right in. But here's the analogy. I'll give you two analogies. One is, you know, I've got a multi-story home. So to go to the second floor, I don't have the power in my legs to high jump to the second floor. So I got to climb the steps, right? So I climb the stairway or, you know, up to the second floor. So what's the stairway of your problem? And what's the first step? And take it. The second piece of it is this big, hairy, audacious journey, Alaska to Mexico. It's just a bunch of days broken up. It's, you know, 3,634 miles. Is just 36 100-mile days, 72 50-mile days, and it's 144 25-mile days. Who can't do that? So what are the steps? Where am I going to get to tomorrow? And even when tomorrow is that there's a big part that I got to do, and then there's all sorts of little things, when I had writer's cramp, what can I do in and around that I'm not thinking of the right word in the right passage or this chapter? What chapter can I go to that is easier for me to kind of fill out right now? So you're making progress on that. And then sometimes you become really inspired to say, okay, now I'm going to attack that big part. But you're always doing something that is advancing the ball.
I think that is a wonderful way to end the show. So I have to say, thank you, Jerry, for joining us. It was an absolute pleasure. And I just want people to remember that when they turn off this episode, because I want them to do it right now, because I agree with that like crazy.
Start now. What the hell? I mean, you know, everybody, I don't want to overtalk it, but you only get good when you start. You can't get good thinking about it. Start. That's just it.
That's just it. It's that simple.
But I really appreciate Bobby, you having me on your program, and I hope your listeners find it worthwhile.
Thank you, sir. Bobby, back with you. Some quick reminders before I let you go and enjoy your week. Go beyond what you believe is possible. Remember, YBYAWC. You bet your ass we can, and you bet your ass you can. I added that part because I think it's really important that all of us believe in ourselves. We just got to go get it and we got to keep pushing. I know that sounded kind of superficial and cheesy, but it's the truth. The second thing, big reminder from the podcast, to Jerry, it's important to realize this is to Jerry. Life's biggest question is this: what's the story of the rest of your life and will it be a story worth telling? We're all living our own story. You just need to decide if that's the story you want people to remember you by. The third and final thing, this is this week's weekly life hack. Here we go. Ask yourself right now, what have I wanted to do that I haven't yet done? go do that very thing this week. Stop kicking it around and make that change. That is the closing for the Master to Start podcast. Once again, presented by GoMahi.com. Like always, have an incredible week. Make sure you live your best life and make that change if you're not writing that story that you want to be remembered by. Have a good week, everyone. We'll see ya next Monday.